everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined, as always, in my retro wrestling endeavours by Sondra Ruth Wesseldyke Reinstein. Hi, Sondra. How are you today?
I mean, I'm fine, Kenny, going through your retro wrestling endeavours. What the fuck was that?
I don't know. Listen, I've got to host this shit. I've got to, like, come up with stuff to say. You just sit there and complain.
I don't just complain.
Your job's easy.
I come up with things to say.
Your job's easy. I'm the one that's got to steer the boat and make sure we don't hit icebergs like the Titanic.
Yeah, we wouldn't want the Titanic to sink. That just always reminds me of the WrestleMania 6 review.
We're not going there.
Like, the Titanic sinks.
So good.
Go back to the archives on Patreon if you haven't listened to the WrestleMania 6 review. It's available at the $1 level.
Please do check it out. So we're here to talk about our second Raw Saturday Night episode. Now, this episode had a little bit more to it than last week, mainly because this episode was actually broadcast, I think, at 7 p.m. on the Saturday night, whereas last week's one...
You say this one had more to it. I felt like this one was more of a slog than last week.
Because last week's had the big, you know, the Undertaker Kane thing going through it. Now, I do need to say, please, I urge you, everybody, go along to patreon.com/insidetheropes, where Finn and I had an absolute ball reviewing Sunday Night Heat from September 6th. Our favourite Heat episode to date on the archives, where we just had a real fun talking about that episode. So obviously when we're here, I give you guys the rundown on what happened. So here is what happened on the show that was before this. Because last week when we had the September 5th episode, there was all the stuff with Undertaker and Kane. Vince had called them putrid pussies and all that sort of stuff. So here's what happened on Heat the following night, September 6th, 1998. So we had Gangrel beating Dick Togo in a very short match. Mark Mero gave Jacqueline a new trophy to replace the bikini one. He said that he'd bought it from their... he shaved off their winnings. So, like, apparently, like, they get money for winning.
Their winnings for winning what?
Who knows? The bikini contest, I guess, officially.
okay.
Ken Shamrock fought Bradshaw, and then Vader did a run-in, which kind of, you know, equalized the run-in from the night before. Road Dogg faced Dennis Knight, and we wanted to kill ourselves. But the show-long storyline was that Vince McMahon was going to reveal his master plan on the show. And it was a really fun angle throughout the night where Vince is going to reveal this master plan, but The Undertaker and Kane are still after him. We then got the weirdest tag team match of all time, which is the first ever WWF tag team match where The Undertaker and Kane teamed up together. And they took on Animal and Draws. And the best part of it was when Hawk phones in from rehab. Calls from rehab.
Because they mention on Raw, on this episode of Raw that we're discussing, that Hawk is now in rehab, and that's why he's not there. I think when Draws comes out or something, they mention that Hawk is in rehab, and I just...
So we get the call. Jim Ross could not get
head in my hands.
Jim Ross could... Like, Jim Ross sounds so uninterested that this guy's in rehab, but it was... Anyway, so the match goes on. Then the match ends, but...
I mean, how much does he have to say from rehab?
Just that he's there.
Okay.
So the end into the match is basically we've got the what is the finish game? Kane clotheslines Animal, and then Undertaker clips his knee. Undertaker then as it's all happening, Vince McMahon wanders down to the ring as Draws comes in to hit the Undertaker, who's the legal man. The bell rings. We don't know why or what the finish is, and Kane and Undertaker just kill Animal and Draws, but Vince is at the top of the ramp, almost like, you know, his plan is working because him calling them putrid pussies is making them just destroy everybody on the road to, you know, who we know that he wants them to destroy.
Kind of like happened on Raw last week where they destroyed, like, literally every single match.
Exactly.
So except for Southern Justice or whatever. Like, they couldn't be bothered to interrupt that one.
I figured out why. Continuity here. Dennis Knight is
that
part-
when they were... just backstage or whatever, looking for Vince's door?
Well, no, I was thinking. So, Dennis Knight is famously part of the BSK, the Black Street Crew, or the Bad Street Crew, what they're called.
Wasn't it Bone Street Crew?
Bone Street Crew,
the guys that played dominoes backstage?
The BSK. So, he was in Undertaker's crew. So, maybe Undertaker was like, we'll leave him alone, he's in my crew.
But on like on screen, he's not in his crew. He's Southern
Saundra,
Justice.
I'm reaching here. Let me reach. We got okay. a really fun short match with Edge and Taka Michinoku on Heat, which was good. And Edge gets the win in that one. The Undertaker and Kane is the best thing in the world. The Undertaker and Kane come out dragging Patterson and Briscoe by their ties. They want Vince to come to ringside. He does not come out, so they just absolutely beat the ever-loving piss out of the Stooges, and they take the best bumps of all time, and then they both take a chokeslam to be killed. Then we get D'Lo Brown versus Val Venus for the European Championship rematch from SummerSlam. D'Lo ends up getting the win, but he removes a turnbuckle pad, which is what helps D'Lo get the win. So then after the match, Val Venus ends up removing D'Lo's chest protector and hitting him with a powerbomb, and then does a money shot as a little bit of redemption for D'Lo cheating to get the victory. But all these things.
I mean, that pectoral muscle is never going to heal if Val Venus keeps removing D'Lo Brown's chest protector.
He's going to need to keep wearing it.
It's true.
But the main event segment is, of course, Vince McMahon coming out to address The Undertaker and Kane. The Undertaker and Kane come out to kill him, and he says, wait a second, just hear me out. You guys both deserve a WWF Championship match. And this makes them stop and go, okay, well, listen. And then Austin comes out, and there's this great bit where Vince McMahon says about Austin, he says, you have no social redeeming values in the World Wrestling Federation.
No social redeeming values?
It is the best. So Vince just is like, you are a horrible person, Steve Austin, essentially.
That's and like it, when he was like talking to Austin after he won the belt and was like, I'm incapable of hate. Yeah. I just, you know.
But now he's just like, you have no morals. You have nothing. So long story short, in the end, Vince says Undertaker and Kane are both worthy of a title match. So at Breakdown in Your House, Steve Austin will defend the WWF title against both the Undertaker and Kane in a triple threat match. We had fun with this show. It was a little show-long storyline that went through, and it ended with, you know, us getting the master plan of what it was. So a fun addition to Heat, short and sweet. Finn and I have now realised that there is a thing called the Heat Regulation. And that is that no match on Heat is allowed to last 3 minutes.
So because they don't have enough time, right? Like, they have to speed through all this stuff.
There is one or two dangerously close breaches of the Heat regulations. So,
oh no.
We will keep abreast of this on the Retro Heat
How
podcast.
Close did Edge and Taka Michinoku get? Because I think I would like to see them wrestle each other.
So D'Lo and Val went 2 minutes and 50. Very close call. Edge and Taka went 2 minutes and 13. LOD 2000 and Undertaker and Kane went 2 minutes and 56 seconds, which leads me to believe maybe it wasn't a DQ, maybe they just ran out of time. Maybe it was a draw.
That could be. Was it the main event too?
No,
so
no,
like
no.
On Shotgun when they had to cut off whatever match that was, the Godwins and the Headbangers or whatever?
No, this one was just midway through the show.
Wow.
And then Road Dogg and Dennis Knight lasted 2 minutes and 27 seconds, which is 2 minutes and 27 seconds too long. And yep. Ken Shamrock and Bradshaw went 2 minutes, and Gangrel and Dick Togo went 2 minutes and 15.
It really seems like, I mean, they could have had Road Dogg and Dennis Knight not wrestle, and then you could have gotten more of, like, Edge and Taka Michinoku.
Exactly, or Undertaker and Kane beating up Briscoe and Patterson. Like, there's more to be had. So so that's what happened on Sunday Night Heat. So now we're here on September 12th. This was taped in Lowell, Massachusetts on September 1st. For whatever reason, they decided, well, let's just not have a Raw set for this show.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I don't know. This one felt weird to me. Like, last week's was, like, the matches were in a weird order, and the main event didn't feel like the main event, but it still kind of felt like Raw. This one didn't really feel like Raw. It just felt like nothing.
Well, because last week, it made sense that, okay, we're not gonna put a lot of time into the second hour because it's gonna be midnight to 1 a.m. So it makes sense. But this week, like, there's not even
this
a
week.
Set.
It just felt like they didn't put any effort into any of it.
It's Raw Saturday night for you.
I'm not saying that in the way that, like, I'm complaining because I have to watch Retro Raw. It's just like, look at the matches that we saw on this show. Did any of them matter shape, or form?
You could totally miss this show.
Yeah.
So I'm actually.
I felt like I was watching Shotgun Saturday Night.
I'm actually quite excited because, from what I remember, once we get to Raw like September 14th, things start kind of getting going again. So I'm looking forward to getting this out of the way. So anyway,
this one was in that weird spot where it's Raw Saturday Night, but there's another Raw literally in 2 days, and they have heat in 1 day. So it's kind of like this one really doesn't matter.
Yeah, because this is basically getting you to try and watch Heat the next night. That's the premise.
Yeah.
Heat to Raw. So let's get into it. So the opening match of the show is Edge against Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett's obviously got Southern Justice with him. The match goes about 5 minutes. We hear Jerry Lawler's like, where does Edge hang out before the show? Why does he go through the crowd? Very valid questions from Jerry Lawler. I mean, Kevin Kelly should be on it, but you know, that's...
Kevin Kelly really should be on it, but maybe he's scared of the Edge. Because they're still calling him the Edge from time to time. Right. But yes, Jerry Lawler doesn't understand why the Edge does this and why he can't just come out like a normal WWF superstar. Why does he have to come through the crowd and all this stuff? I like that. I think it gives Edge an air of mystery. And I mean, JR just kind of seems like he can't be bothered. He's like, I don't know. He does what he wants to do.
Yeah, it's true. We did see in this match the debut of Jeff Jarrett using the Stroke, the finisher that he insisted Molly Spartan do on me. But he doesn't use it as a finisher. He just uses it as like a transitional move. So that was pretty interesting.
Oh, that's a finisher of his, actually?
Yeah, basically the Skull Crushing Finale. It becomes his finisher.
Yeah, the Skull Crushing Finale, the modified Russian leg sweep or whatever. Yeah, and Jeff Jarrett, you know, has his new shiny haircut, which is not him being shaved bald, and he has a shirt that says, don't piss me off, but the eye is a little asterisk because apparently piss is still too edgy for Monday or Saturday Night Raw or whatever this is. Yeah.
So I actually thought the match was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
The match itself was good, yeah. I could use more wrestling like this. It's kind of nice that we're starting to get some people on the roster who are actually genuinely good wrestlers because, I mean, Edge is new, and so he seems like he's fairly new at this, but how long has Edge been wrestling at this point? Like, not in WWF, but just...
I think he started wrestling in 96. So maybe
okay.
two and a half years, maybe. I know that little sidetrack, but I guess people find it interesting. So we were with Pat Patterson on Tuesday in London, and I showed him the flyer, so we're bringing Edge over. And he said he's a really good guy. And he said when we were doing the tryouts, he said he remembers that Edge stuck out to Patterson, like that he was just like this guy gets it, he's learning it, he's fast. And I mean, Edge was never really bad at any point.
He definitely has something about him. Like, I mean, I think I said last week or on some week that, you know, he's kind of at the same level as Draws right now in terms of being a new guy who's young, who's, you know, less experienced in the WWF. But there's something about him that is intriguing and charismatic. And I don't think that's just me being biased because he's one of my very, very favorites.
But he's also presented very differently.
He's presented very differently, and he's presented like an enigma. You know, he's presented like someone that you kind of want to know more about, but when he gets in the ring, he's solid, and the matches tend to be good, better than most of the matches in 1998 have been. So it's promising, and I kind of like that. And they do make a point of pointing out how young some of these superstars are, right? Like, I think when Bradshaw fights, who does Bradshaw fight later?
Draws.
Yeah, they make a point that, you know, oh, these two youngsters. So it's very obvious that they're trying to push new talent. And I know that's kind of a dig at WCW, but it is kind of refreshing, you know, like it's nice that they're trying to build stars of the future. And I think Edge is one of those ones. I think he's going to do all right in this tier professional wrestling business.
Yeah. And I actually think one of the charms of Raw, I mean, what, you know, going back and watching Raw now, you know, the wrestling is terrible for the most part, but the one of the charms of it is you do kind of get to see things work and not work. Like,
mm-hmm.
they try stuff, and I would prefer to watch stuff being tried than just not see it, so... But Edge is one
of the...
Well,
it doesn't feel flat at any point. Well, I mean, the show felt flat because it was basically an advertisement for Heat, but... As a whole, the product doesn't feel flat. It feels infuriating at times in how bad it can be when stuff doesn't work, Hawk. But it also, I agree. Like, there's something intriguing about seeing them try stuff and seeing them not just stick to the same sanitized, like, formula, I guess, mm-hmm. which is nice. And also, Jerry Lawler, I remember, was very obsessed with Edge's hair in this match. He just kept mentioning his stringy hair. And, I mean, Edge's hair is luxurious.
He's got a great head of hair. Anyway, we then move on to Bradshaw against Draws. They go about 4 minutes. It is not the greatest match of all time by any stretch of the imagination.
Nope.
Bradshaw's can be quite heely. He put his feet in the ropes to try and pin Draws. giving him the lariat to put the finishing touch. I mean, nobody cared about this match. And, you know, they're trying here with Bradshaw to add something to him, but it's just not really working. And I think that the thing with Bradshaw is I think that he actually is at his best when he is in a tag team. I don't think he works as well as a singles.
He almost needs someone to bounce off of. I mean, he's boring as shit, right? Like, Bradshaw is not an interesting character. He's just not.
I mean, it's like, even like, you know, you really don't like the Triple H character, but at least when we talk about him, there is stuff to talk about. Like, oh, I didn't like this, or I liked that, or whatever. And you could, they're, like, you remember him. But Bradshaw is almost, like, really forgettable in every single way.
He's just an angry dude who might also still be a cowboy, question mark, but we're not sure. And, I mean, this was a Brawl for All rematch, so, you know, everyone was clamoring for that. This match is just nothing, right? Like, Draws's hair is terrible. I want more Draws's world. That would make me more interested, just because then maybe I would like Draws more, except for he comes across as kind of a douchebag, so maybe I wouldn't like Draws more if I saw more Draws's world. I don't know.
I don't get the feeling you would.
No, probably not. So that might not be helpful at all.
So we get that. Then we get a video package, which is hyping the triple threat of Steve Austin, Undertaker, and Kane. We see the match announcement from Heat. So that's going to be the main event. It kind of makes sense. Like, in the story, like, why would Vince McMahon not stack the deck whenever he can? So he's decided to put Undertaker and Kane against Austin. I guess the intrigue there is maybe that, like, Undertaker and Kane both want to be the champion, but are they going to let the other one get the title, kind of thing?
You know, are they going to turn on each other or are they not? It's kind of like when the Iconics were in the Fatal 4-Way or whatever. Like, are the Iconics going to, like, pin each other or not? Or, like, when Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn had a chance at a triple threat. So it's a classic story.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a tried and tested one. So then we go from there to Marvelous Mark Mero against Miguel Perez. Now, Miguel Perez prompted you to send me a message on Facebook, Sandra. What were your thoughts about Miguel Perez here?
Miguel Perez has shaved his back, right? And I feel like I should be relieved about that because the back hair situation was prominent and excessive. But it kind of weirded me out to see Miguel Perez just look like a dude.
Miguel Perez is an enigma.
But
he's a very boring enigma.
Yes. He's an enigma that I don't really care to find the answer to, necessarily. Although he has gotten himself in better shape. I will give Miguel Perez that. I don't think it was just the hair making him look a little tubbier before. It did add, like, inches onto his physique.
Yeah. Miguel Perez is probably the guy that, like, if you were really tanked and you'd just been dumped in a night out, you'd probably go home with him. And you'd, have sex with him in the dark. And then you'd wake up and you'd see his back and you'd, like, feel really bad about yourself.
Yeah, that's accurate.
Just, you know, not my personal experience, just a thought.
Not that you've ever been there or anything like that, right?
Oh, no, hairy backs, man. Oh, can't do it. So Mark Mero ends up getting the win, not really much to say about it. Michael Cole interviews the Oddities and the Insane Clown Posse.
Jacqueline looks great.
She does.
She doesn't do a whole lot in this match, but I think she tries to, like, distract Miguel Perez at one point, and she's just kind of there. Mark Mero isn't doing much, but I still kind of like him.
I mean, I know it sounds like... The thing is, I mean, it's not really sexist, but the problem is, if you're a guy in 1998, right, if you're measuring it by the signs of the times, if your wife is able to basically powerbomb you and own you, you're done. Because that's not what the kind of parameters of the universe at that point are telling you happens to anybody. So,
well, yeah, I mean, look at the way that they're treating China on commentary. Fuck's sake.
But even then, if there's no intergender wrestling whatsoever, right, there's not been any, and then all of a sudden Sable's able to quite handily beat up Mark Mero, I mean, that's why...
But not, like, it wasn't just Sable beating him up. I mean, Edge was involved.
No, but I'm talking about, like, the powerbomb a couple of months ago.
Oh, well, that was just a powerbomb. That wasn't even a match.
But still, like... Nobody at that point, no man had ever been powerbombed by a woman. And it's like, the thing with China that made sense is that China had the strength and the physique to do it. Whereas with Sable, it's like, she does not have the strength in her size to be able to do that to Mark Merrill in the sphere of the universe that we're in, is what I'm saying. So I mean,
yeah, that's true.
I mean, look at it this way.
But I mean, like the Hurricane Rana she did was really like good.
I mean, she was athletic, but you know, there's a reason that Steve Austin was supposed to work a headline show with Mark Merrill in May, and he called Vince McMahon and said, "Who am I wrestling on Saturday now?" Because he's just been powerbombed on TV by his wife. So why would it take me anything more than 5 seconds to beat him? Because at that point, that's what
I guess it's just so strange for me, like as someone who watches a lot of intergender wrestling, and it's just not a thing to me. Like it's not a thing at all. So it seems so strange that.
There you go.
Oh no! It seems so strange that like one powerbomb from Sable would be the end of his career, and I've always heard people say that, like that, you know, him taking that powerbomb from Sable and he was done. And I mean, it doesn't feel like he's like completely done on Raw. It feels like he's very much lower card. It doesn't feel like he's going to be Intercontinental Champion again or anything like that. But it still seems like he's a useful character, and I guess I just don't understand why he has to be thrown in the bin just because he took a powerbomb from a woman. But
I mean, I guess, you know, I'm trying, I think maybe a comparable example is like, it's maybe like, if you watch a match from 1990 and you're like, he got pinned by a dropkick? Like, what was presented at the time was different.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think the thing with Mark Merrill, it's been a gradual thing, right? It's like, it's not like the powerbomb thing happened and he's kind of just like, really been the secondary character ever since.
I mean, I feel like he was almost the secondary character even when that was going on, even when it was Sable versus Mark Miro. I mean, that whole story was predicated on the fact that Sable was more interesting than Mark Miro. The crowd wanted to see Sable. The crowd did not want to see Mark Miro. And they turned it into a storyline. And I think that they turned it into a good storyline until the advent of the evening gown match and the Keating contest and all that bullshit. But like for a while, Sable versus Mark Miro, I was actually quite into, you know, when it was like Sable and Miro versus Luna and Goldust, or the artist formerly known as Goldust. I was surprised that I was so into it because it was a compelling story. Now it just kind of seems like Sable is incredibly bland and boring, and I don't know, the allure of Sable has definitely worn off for me because now all she does is just kind of like up here and not do a whole lot, and she's terrible. But I don't know, it kind of bums me out that, you know, Mark Miro, I think, is a very valuable character, even if he has to be lower card. I just, it seems like he still has use, and it bums me out that everyone's like, oh no, he's just done.
Yeah, it's a shame. I think he plays his character very well. I think he does. Anyway, so we move on from that to Michael Cole interviewing the Oddities and Insane Clown Posse. Insane Clown Posse are cutting a promo about DOA. They're pretty animated. You know, they're pretty decent mouthpieces for the Oddities, I guess.
I think I like the Oddities better without ICP, but I did really appreciate Giant Silva and Kurgan in the background reacting to ICP talking. For instance, when Giant Silva decided that he smelled a bad smell when they started talking about DOA, and then Kurgan, you know, also decided to hold his nose because, yes, DOA, they're stinky. And they're just so over-animated about everything. It's adorable.
Then Cole speaks to DOA and Paul Ellering, and Paul Ellering says that the DOA will drop the Oddities. What was it you compared it to again? Drop the Oddities.
I can't remember
like
at all.
Like an industrial something. An industrial average. Anyway, the beginning of Paul Ellering.
Was he referencing the Wall Street Journal?
Probably. So the match goes 1:54. Within the first minute, Golga tries to go to the top rope with so much force that it breaks. Then the match.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't try to go to the top. He just tries to run the ropes, and the top rope breaks. Right.
Oh yeah, yeah, no.
Or did
yeah,
he go up?
No. Yeah, no, he didn't. He basically went off. I mean, he went off the top rope, like as in like he hit the top rope, forcing it to break. And then ICP run in. They get beaten down by DOA. We don't know what's happened. There's a broken top rope. I mean, look, I love me some Oddities, but I feel like God gave us a pass here. We got the entrance.
This match was not going to be great.
So maybe
in any
it was,
sense of the word.
Everything that I want from the Oddities, I can get in the first 1:54. So
that's fair.
At least
we didn't get a lot of Kurgan in this match, which bummed me out. But I mean, the rope breaking, you could tell that they were just like, fuck, what do we do? And like, I've been at shows where ropes have broken like that, and the wrestlers have to really think on their feet and really kind of like, you know, be like, oh shit, what do we do in this situation? And I don't know that the Oddities and DOA are the best professional wrestlers to be able to handle that situation with grace. And they didn't really. DOA did try to start using the rope to like choke the Oddities. I think they tried to choke Golga, or they wrapped it around someone's foot or whatever, which, you know, it's fine. But they were just kind of like all stumbling around going, right, there's not a rope anymore. What do we do? Like, they were visibly just kind of standing around, and it was pretty awkward. So thankfully it didn't last too long, I guess, because I mean, like, you can still try to use the second rope, or you can, you know, try to just do other things. But I mean, it's not an easy situation to be in. I always just get scared when ropes break, like, because I'm always afraid for the wrestlers. Like, I don't ever want the ropes to break on like a super springboard move where someone falls down and gets hurt or something. I always worry.
Sandra, I feel like it's safe to say we're not going to get any super springboards in the Oddities versus DOA.
That's true, but like, what if Golga had really leaned into the rope too much more and like fell backwards or something?
True. Him and his medicine ball head would have been in trouble.
It's true.
We get clips from The Undertaker and Kane destroying The Rock from last week, and then I thought this is a pretty interesting thing. So The Rock comes out. It's the first, you know, he's coming out here after D'Lo last week kind of leaving him. And he talks about how he's still the people's champion despite losing at SummerSlam. He's going to get revenge on Kane for what he did last week. And it felt here like the crowd were quite behind him. And I think what's kind of fascinating about that is that, you know how like sometimes when you have a wrestler, it's like he's turning because he has done all these like heroic things? The Rock has not in any way done heroic
things.
The
Rock has done no heroic things.
But
like, well, I mean, zero heroic things.
The only heroic thing he's really done is he tried to save D'Lo. And that backfired on him. But you can see the crowd are really ready to sort of embrace him. And I know you're not, but the crowd... And
well, he is a charismatic, good-looking dude. I mean, he's still a piece of shit, so I'm not ready to embrace him. But
he's
you know, the crowd enjoys his catchphrases and things.
The thing is, what's good about this is, like, it is time to turn the Rock babyface here. It is time to do it. And I think we're so used to living in an era where, like, so, like, today, Elias should be a babyface. Because he's great, and people love him. But we're in this weird
place. I mean, how long did it take for Rusev Day to be proper babyfaces? Like, for fucking ever.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas here, it feels like they're actually kind of like making a move, but like they like this guy, let's turn him. So,
well, because it seems like in this era, and you know, this is something that NXT still does, but in this era, they're actually listening to the crowd. Unlike nowadays, when Stephanie McMahon, what was that conference she was at recently? She was like, the reason WWE is so successful is we listen to our audience. I mean,
okay.
Really? Really, do you? Like, maybe you're listening, but you're not doing anything as a result of that listening nowadays, Ms. Stephanie McMahon. And in 1998, that's something I'll give 1998, is that it really does feel like they're listening to their audience and doing things based on that push and pull of audience and wrestling company interacting together, right? Like, Stone Cold Steve Austin's ascent would not have happened without the popularity that he got from the crowd. You know, The Rock's babyface turn, DX's fucking babyface turn, that is not a babyface turn, in my opinion. But that wouldn't have happened without the crowd reaction and the crowd reacting well to DX and their shenanigans and whatnot, right? So there is definitely a push and pull there. And it's nice to see that it feels like an organic product where they are involving the audience in the decision, not like people going on Twitter and being like, I think this should happen. But like, they're listening to reactions at wrestling events and adjusting accordingly.
John Cena broke the system.
John Cena broke the system. It's true.
The Lion's Den match is then shown in its entirety from SummerSlam. So, yeah. Listen to our SummerSlam review on Patreon to hear the thoughts about that.
It's a good match. It was worth watching again.
Up next, though, is Sandra's favorites, Southern Justice, going up against Too Much. Mark Canterbury gets the pin on Scott Taylor in about 4 minutes. Yeah, Southern Justice, just an atrocious team.
They are horrendous. And I did not need to see two Southern Justice appearances on this episode of Retro Saturday Night Raw. Didn't make me happy, Kenny. I didn't really watch it very closely because Southern Justice were in the ring. I do like Too Much quite a lot. And more and more, not just because he's dead, but more and more, I am quite fond of Brian Christopher as a performer, which is not something I expected on this retro journey. But I think just his reactions to losing and his reactions after the match and like the way he crawls on Scott Taylor was kind of sexual. But he just like, he is distraught. He's like, no, how could we have lost? This is the most terrible thing in the world. And I find him quite entertaining.
He is entertaining.
I don't find Southern Justice very entertaining.
Nobody does. Finn and I also have a rant about Southern Justice on the Heat podcast. We're like, why can't they go away?
I can't wait to listen to this. I'm excited.
Vader takes on Dustin Runnels, and Vader gets a very rare win here. During the match, Val Venus is mocking Dustin Runnels, and parading around with a sign that says, I have come. Oh, God. Like, the thing is,
it kind of make me chuckle.
It is funny. Like, it is quite funny. I have come. C-O-M-E, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep. He has come, indeed. Did you notice Vader, during his entrance, was doing his dance thing again?
He gives no fucks now. I think Vader's on the coke, and he's just, like, having a laugh. But my favorite thing is, so Val Venus has this sign, right? That says, I have come, and then Dustin Runnels starts praying. And I'm like, what is this gonna do? Oh, God.
Well, because, I mean, the whole thing is supposed to be that, like, Dustin Runnels is supposed to be implying that Jesus is coming back, right? Because, like, we know it's going to be Goldust, which I'm glad you told me so that I wasn't just, like, raging about this whole thing forever. But the whole thing is he's supposed to be implying that Jesus is coming back and he's, like, supposed to be religious and stuff. Because, I mean, he was, like, leading prayers on commentary that one time. So they're saying that Dustin Runnels and Val Venus are just opposite sides of the spectrum because, you know, like, Val Venus is a the reprobate of society and Dustin Runnels wants to uphold the virtues of religion or something. We don't really know. I mean, it's really hard to care about this feud a whole lot because I still don't like Val Venus because he's still a cretin and Dustin Runnels, what even? So I guess there we are. It's just, but Vader just cracked me up. Like when he comes out for his entrance, he kind of like runs in almost like he's so excited. Like he's a kid on Christmas and he's like looking around like, hey, what am I going to do? Oh, I'm going to go over here. I'm going to start dancing to my music. He's just entertaining himself at this point. And it was kind of adorable.
Yeah, let's enjoy him while we can. We get a video package.
I mean, I liked seeing Vader get a win, even if it was only over, you know, Dustin Runnels.
We do see a video package of Sable in the ring, as in, like, her performances when she's been in the ring. Then, probably my favourite part of the show is up next, when Al Snow comes out of the crowd and says that he will not leave the ring until he sees a WWF official. So, of course, Commissioner Slaughter, Pat Patterson, and General Briscoe come out. Again, big props to Commissioner Slaughter,
Did you notice he said, one with a pulse, preferably?
One with a pulse, preferably. My favourite bit is, I mean, obviously, Commissioner Slaughter, very clever. He took his week's vacay on the week that Kane and Undertaker were killing everybody, including the other Stooges. But now he's back. And they all are ordering Al Snow to leave the ring. But since they do not book him in a match, Al Snow gives Pat Patterson a low blow with head and flees through the crowd. But Pat Patterson sold this low blow in the best way possible. This was so good.
I loved this segment. This was a blast. Hearing Al Snow just kind of deride each of them, and he was acting like he was on a game show, like, are you gonna give me a meeting with, you know, with an official? And they were like, look, you need to leave or whatever, because he wanted a wrestling match, right? He says he's been reinstated as a wrestler in the World Wrestling Federation and he wants a match and he wants to know who his opponent is. So anything they try to say, like, get out of the ring or we'll talk about this, he's like, nope, you've lost that trip to Aruba, or nope, you've lost that coat or whatever you were gonna win. And it's, I mean, it's all cheesy stuff, but it's a lot of fun. Al Snow is just a lot of fun, and I love that he comes through the crowd and there are people in the crowd that have mannequin heads, and he's super over. Like,
he is over.
Al Snow.
Then we go from that great segment to Michael Cole's interviewing the Headbangers. They're confused about who they're wrestling. Because
no, they're confused about why they're there.
Yes, they're confused about why they're there.
Because they're like, no, we're not on Raw. We're only on Shotgun. like, we don't do Raw. And then Cole's like, this is Raw Saturday night. And they go, oh, it's Saturday. That's why.
They are a treasure, ladies and gentlemen.
They're a treasure until they get super racist.
Yes, that is accurate. But there is treasure here when they're talking about that.
Well, no, the first part of this promo was a treasure. The second part of this promo where they said they'll put Mark Henry in the corner with a bunch of bananas because that will keep him occupied and they can take out D'Lo Brown, I found problematic. I have been a Headbangers fan.
I feel like the problem here is not that the Headbangers are racist, is that the Headbangers are stupid. Like, it did not feel like racism to me. It felt like real, like, why would Mark Henry have bananas?
Because they're calling him a gorilla.
No, no, no. But what I'm saying is, I don't think they're clever enough to make that statement as what that would mean in that sense. I think they're just a bit stupid. Because, like, why D'Lo doesn't get any of that. And, I mean, D'Lo looks... Anyway, I'm not going to tell.
No, but I feel like it was very racist. Like, it was very clearly like, oh, he's a big ape. We'll put him in the corner with bananas.
Anyway, so we get the Headbangers versus D'Lo and Mark Henry. It lasts about five minutes.
Like it.
Sorry?
I really did not like that was in a promo and that was allowed to be a thing in 1998, and it bothered me.
I mean, Vince Russo is...
an atrocious human being?
The thing is, I just don't buy that this is like... this feels like Russo to me.
Well, I'm sure it is.
Yeah. Anyway, so we have the match.
That wouldn't shock me at all.
D'Lo and Mark Henry against the Headbangers. They go about 5 minutes, but in the end, China runs in and tackles Mark Henry again, and officials have to get China off of Mark Henry, and DX has to run in and restrain her. So China is pissed at Mark Henry for his part in what happened to her. How do you feel about her running in and trying to take some control?
I like that. I like that she's still upset at Mark Henry because Mark Henry was a cretin to her, right? I don't know why she's not beating up The Rock because The Rock was more the instigator and the abuser in that situation. So I guess that's the thing that's kind of baffling is that they're trying to turn The Rock babyface and she didn't come out and interrupt his promo or anything. Like especially when his promo had to do with Triple H, like you'd think that she would be angry at The Rock, especially when he's talking about how he's going to get the championship back from Triple H, who's her person. You know, like, I mean, we've established that China has the most loyalty to Triple H out of anyone in DX because, you know, she interfered in that Triple H X-Pac match. So, I mean, she's proven her loyalty is to Triple H and to DX as a whole, but Triple H specifically. So I guess I don't understand why she's so angry at Mark Henry and not angry at The Rock, who was the one who told Mark Henry to be all creepy to her. But I like the fact that she's at least standing up for herself, and she looks great doing this. Like, she, I mean, the fact that she's able to take down Mark Henry of all people, like, that, because China is big, right? Like, she is a big foreboding presence. She's very strong. She's great in her bodyguard role, but it just kind of surprises me that they would put her up against Mark Henry, who's one of the biggest people on the roster, and allow her to get so much action in on him, I guess, because, I mean, you were talking about how everyone talked about, like, Sable power bombing Mark Miro and he was done. Well, I mean, they're allowing China to beat up Mark Henry, and commentary drives me crazy.
Can I just say, though, very quickly, I think the difference is that China physically looks like she could hang, which I think is the difference. Because Sable...
Oh, no, for sure. And I'm glad that China's able to get... You know, I'm glad that she's able to get offense on Mark Henry. I think it's a good thing.
I think ultimately becomes her downfall, because when she starts wrestling guys, it never recovers. She was much hotter in terms of, like, a character when she was playing that role that she played. The sad thing is that I think people will kind of, you know, maybe she didn't say that because she just wasn't a great wrestler. But I think what I really am learning in watching this again is that China was really great for, like, a long time.
And she's been awesome since she debuted. I mean, like, I'm interested to see how it goes when she gets in the ring, because I know that she wasn't the greatest wrestler. But as a character and as a bodyguard and as someone who will just, like, whip the piss out of people from time to time, she's amazing. And she definitely has value in these segments.
100%. So we'll see where that goes.
And I like that she's super angry. You know, I think that's great. I think that's really cool. And it was just, I mean, commentary still kind of drives me crazy and is very cringe inducing because JR's just like, she's going to have to be careful or she's going to get treated like a man. You know, like if she is going to go after Mark Henry, just watch out and he might start treating her like she's a man and he might want to fight her. Like she clearly wants to fight him. That is why she is out here punching him in the face. Like I don't think she's worried about having someone come and fight her because obviously that is what she wants that. Like she's instigating that. She's like, look, I am a big brute of a woman and I will, you know, kick your ass. And I want to see her kick their asses. I don't want it to be like she's treated like this special little like doll that they can't touch. Like she's fucking China.
She is great, and we'll see where it all goes. I actually really, really enjoyed the main event of this show, which was DX against Kai and Tai. My favorite thing that I read online was the battle of one team who wants you to suck it and the other team who wants you to chop it off. So.
Seriously, when Kai and Tai was making their entrances, right? Like they are all making motions of like chopping off their own dicks for some reason.
They are clinging onto that character trait for dear life.
They really are. And then DX is all like, let's get ready to suck it. And I'm just like, okay. Like, I understand that the whole Joey Ryan thing is not for everyone, right? But don't tell me that there hasn't been penis obsession in wrestling forever, including your beloved Attitude Era, where everyone is talking about penises all the time.
I
I
do
mean,
want to
Al
just state
Snow's
in.
out here going, what do we want? Head. What do we need? Head. And then DX is like, suck my penis. And Kai and Tai's like, we'll chop off your penis. And Val Venus is like, I have a penis.
I mean, I can only speak for myself. I think there's a big difference between penis banter and your penis can do a move to someone. That's where my issue comes into it. I have no.
Well, no, a lot of people had a problem with the penis druids, though.
Do you know, I like them.
They were funny.
I like the penis druids. I said that on the podcast. I was like, I thought the penis druids were funny. Like, listen, now if you want to sit down and talk about the ridiculousness of the dick flip and why it's terrible, I'm all in on that conversation. But the dick druids, I mean, it's Joey Ryan. You can't expect Lou Thesz when that's happening. Do you know what I mean? Like,
Right?
temper your expectations. But no, I genuinely thought this main event was a ton of fun. You had DX on one side, Kai and Tai on the other. The fans were into it. You had China and Yamaguchi-san with each team.
That was one of my favorite moments was when China faced up with Yamaguchi-san after the match and just like knocked him off the apron and beat the piss out of him. It was great. And her towering over Yamaguchi-san was quite an image.
Yeah, and you know, this was just people in, you know, DX are super over as baby faces here to the crowd. Kai and Tai are annoying heels, and China gets to batter Yamaguchi-san. It was just a fun kind of angle slash squash match to end the show, and end their 2 week battle of Raw Saturday Night. I'm gonna give this show a thumbs in the middle. I don't think it was it didn't feel too long. It didn't feel consequential much. But I like the main event. I really like China getting to beat up Mark Henry. The Al Snow stuff was good. Val Venus's sign made me laugh so hard. The Rock thing where he's kind of like, you know, doing cutting a babyface promo was fun. And I also enjoyed the Edge Double Jeff, Double Jeff, Double J match. Sandra, I've had a couple
Double
of
Jeff.
drinks. I've had a couple of drinks. So yeah, thumbs in the middle show for me.
It's a thumbs down show for me just because it felt like it did feel kind of plodding to me. And even though some of the wrestling I enjoyed all right, like none of it mattered whatsoever. And it kind of felt like an exercise to get through. A lot of it was video packages. We saw the Lion's Den match in full, which I like the Lion's Den match. And I think it's cool that it got to be broadcast, but like, did we really need to see the Lion's Den match in full when we just saw it at SummerSlam or at SummerSlam? Was that right?
At SummerSlam, yep.
At SummerSlam. Like, what pay-per-view just happened? I don't know. I don't know what day it is. So I don't know. It was a harder one to get through. The main event was fun. I liked the main event fine. I mean, I don't like DX as much as you like DX, so that's problematic for me. And I didn't like that Taka Michinoku got pinned. Like, Taka Michinoku actually remembered to take his belt out for the first time in a long time and was like, hey, look, I'm a champion too. And Taka Michinoku's great. So to see him just kind of like, I don't know, like you couldn't have pinned Dick Togo or Sho Funaki instead. Like, I feel like Taka Michinoku should be a little bit more special than that. But it was a fun match, and it had shenanigans and China facing off with Yamaguchi-san and everything. But it's just, as I was watching the show, I was like, nothing I have seen here matters in the slightest. So I guess it's a thumbs down based on that.
Now this is going up Friday night. Sandra and I will be back hopefully on Sunday at some point, if we can, to record the September 14th episode of Raw. There's some fun stuff coming up. Finn Martin and I are going to be back tomorrow to cover Heat, which is the September 13th episode, which I will give you a tease, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to watch this on the network. On the September 13th episode of Sunday Night Heat, we see Ken Shamrock make a challenge to Stone Cold Steve Austin. He comes out to respond. It is a good segment. It is worth checking out. On Raw, that we're going to be watching, we have The Rock against Kane. I'm trying to see what else I can tell you that's not spoiling anything. We have The Rock against Kane. Well, that's good. Can't tell you about that. Okay, I can't tell you a lot of things. But what I will tell you is that the main event of the Raw that we are watching is Stone Cold Steve Austin defending the World Wrestling Federation Championship one-on-one on Raw. And it does happen. It's a proper match. Get excited, Sandra. Stone Cold Steve Austin will defend his WWF Championship against Ken Shamrock.
I am excited about it. And it actually happens. It's not like 2 minutes before
properly happens.
Oh, man, that's going to be good. I'm excited about that for sure.
So I think that the episode that we're going to see has a lot more story stuff to it. We also get to see Edge versus Gangrel.
Ooh, I'm looking forward to that.
The last 2 weeks have been kind of like pointless. The heats have
always... Last week at least had Kane and The Undertaker like battering everyone. This one just kind of was there.
Yeah, I do get it. Like, if this show, I mean, you could have missed this show and you didn't really need to see it. But I think the September 14th show, they really amp things up because obviously there's only two more Raws to break down. So we'll hopefully check that out on Sunday. A couple of notes. WWF at this point put a very limited quantity of t-shirts on sale in major malls across America that said, Austin rules, Goldberg sucks.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the Goldberg is a fag sign in the crowd on this particular episode?
I would love to see that gentleman show that sign to Goldberg.
I would be interested to see what Goldberg would do to that particular gentleman. I don't think Goldberg would react kindly to that particular sign.
Last weekend when I went down to MediaCon, we stopped at the T-Bay service station, which is like a farmhouse service station near Manchester, and it just reminded me of Goldberg being in there and how angry he was about food.
Oh, remember that? When he made a beeline and his lovely, lovely wife was just like, he's hungry, don't get in his way.
Yep, pretty much. Also, what else we got? Kurt Angle this week, in September 1998, signed a multi-year contract with the World Wrestling Federation. Steve Blackman and Animal both underwent knee surgery, so they're going to be off for a few weeks. What else can I tell you about that doesn't get into?
Oh, you mean like we're not going to get the scintillating sights of Steve Blackman for a couple weeks on TV? Whatever shall we do?
The character of Abu that we've seen, the psychic of Tiger Ali saying, he has been dumped and now it is Babu who's going to be replacing him. I think they must have done something on Shotgun. The Babu is Pablo Marquez, who worked as El Puerto Ricano in ECW. But he wanted someone who could take bumps for angles, and he's a very good bump taker and works manager
Wasn't
style.
Wasn't that Babu match. Before?
No, it was Abu. So now it's Babu. Oh. Anyway.
Can we just get rid of Tiger Ali Singh? Because I think that would be the better solution to all of this.
Much, much better. So that's pretty much it. I hope you've enjoyed the Raw Saturday Night podcast. We will be back on Sunday, hopefully, to talk about Raw September 14th, 1998. I'm pretty excited to talk about it. I've just kind of skimmed through there what happens, and it feels like a fun episode. I've not seen it since, so it's kind of new for me to go back to it in a way. So check it out. Thanks for listening. Whose song is going to play us out this week, Sandra?
I think... whose song should play us out? We should play... We always play Edge's because I like Edge. Does El Snow have a song?
Not yet.
Oh.
Do you want to play the song that he gets?
Yeah, let's play the song that he gets.
Here's Al Snow, everybody. We'll see you soon. Sondra Ruth, RW, Kenny MC, 1985, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, and insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets. That's going to become a popular website soon. See you later, everybody.
Yes, it is.
Bye.
Bye.
What does everybody want? What does everybody need? What does everybody love? Yeah.